Welcome to SITREP NYC, the New York City Department of Veteran Services podcast. I'm Gil Feliciano. This is the final episode in our series on the health of women veterans. This episode will explore the military experiences that impact the mental health of women veterans and the challenges women face when attempting to address these issues. The veterans featured in this episode will discuss post-traumatic stress disorder and military sexual trauma. Please be advised. Aaliyah Hunter, United States Army National Guard veteran.
A suicide bomber attack. That's how I got injured in Iraq. TBI is what I suffered, a traumatic brain injury. Amongst others, you know, back injury, post-traumatic, you know. I guess I'm one of those veterans that we called it the invisible disability. You don't see it when you look at me, but it's there. You experience it every single day. I was experiencing disability hard. I wasn't experiencing the vertigo just yet. Just migraines and headaches and effects from post-traumatic stress. And it was an incident that I had that said, okay, things have to change. I remember I was on my way to a job. You know, I had come home. I was on my way to a job and I locked my keys in the car. I just remember repeatedly punching the glass until it broke. Got in the car, sat on the glass, bleeding and everything, and went to work. I didn't see the blood or feel it. And I felt it within that I wouldn't be able to continue my days like this. I felt like something had to be addressed because I knew that it wasn't me. I didn't want to exist that way. When am I going to continue to still have outbursts? You feel that. You feel it. At some point, I didn't want it to control my life. And I think that it would have had I not addressed it. I didn't feel like I could do it on my own because I didn't know what was happening. I didn't know what I was experiencing. I didn't know if it had a name, a title. I didn't know. I just know that before I self-destruct, before I find myself in a place and I don't know how I got there, let me just see. I started with Hunter Holmes McGuire in Richmond, the Baltimore VA. I was amazed at the therapists, the psychologists, and the coordinators for women's health were Black women. That to me said a lot. I saw their efforts and I looked up to them, and in a way in which I remember I just got really involved. They show up and I look up to them. I really do. It's not a lot of people that you will come across that work with veterans. They may not be a veteran themselves, that go above and beyond. It can be a safe space, but is it always? No. I experienced something at the VA that it was just traumatizing. I walked in like normal, had a set of keys. Mind you, I had went through plenty of metal detectors with my keys. So this one guard or security officer that was there said, oh, wait a minute, we got something. You have a weapon. I'm like, a weapon? Where's the weapon? My keys were in my book bag, so he pointed out my keychain. He was like, oh, this is a weapon. And so he pulled out my keychain. I'm like, no, this is a keychain. And it was in the shape of a cat's head, right? So I love cats. I even have a tattoo of a cat. I have a kitten at home. I just love cats. I'm like, no, it's a regular cat keychain. Never been pulled aside for it before. Oh no, this is a weapon. And he got really loud. I got pulled back into the office. He yelled at me. He told me I was a criminal. He said that I came in here with an intent to harm somebody. And when I said, wait a minute, like, first of all, we're not gonna have this type of interaction. I'm a veteran, right? Address me as such. I don't have a weapon. I'm not threatening. Do you want to be thrown into a cell? He asked me, did I want to be thrown into a cell? I'm like, so can you, what's the reason for this? What is the reason? Can you just take the keychain if you feel like it's threatening? But I'm telling you, it's not a weapon. I got subpoenaed and everything. And it was the most horrible experience I ever had, most traumatic experience I've ever had going into the VA hospital. And so the first thing I did was trying to find a person to talk to about this. Like, this needs to be addressed. This was completely out of order. Horrible. The way he spoke to me was just like trash on the side of the street. And I really felt like my life was in danger from a keychain. My life was in danger, the interaction. I really had to ask him repeatedly, can you stop yelling at me? Like, I feel unsafe. We went back into the office. He was like, get over this side. And I'm like, I don't feel safe. It's just you and I in here. And then that's when he threatened to throw me into a cell. It wasn't until another officer came in that his tone changed a little bit. And he tried to talk a little civilized, but it was still like really, really disrespectful. I ended up talking to someone about it that morning. And I said, I'm not leaving this hospital until something is done about this. And me sharing my story, one of the male veterans that was there, he couldn't believe it, because just the other day, prior to my experience, he came in with a knife. He knew it was a knife. It was on his hip. I said, well, what happened? Oh, they just took it and let me go. They didn't even hold him. They just took it from him and said, oh, well, check the office. You may can get this back when you leave. But I had a completely different experience from a keychain. I'm not a criminal. Well, you are a criminal. You are. You came in here with an intent to harm somebody. A large part of me was, I was disappointed in myself because that feeling of having to adjust came back over me. Like, I'm still having to adjust and keeping my voice down and making sure that I was trying to rise above, making sure that I didn't agitate this person who seems to be already agitated and was already looking for something, you know. And then I just started to think, if I was a male, you know, oh, let me just get this, just check the office when you leave back out. I know that I've witnessed a lot. I know that I've been involved in a lot. And I also have seen, I've seen the dark sides, but I've also seen the bright side of the VA. For me, my experience with the VA, the good experiences that I've had, it outweighs the not so pleasant experiences that I've had. I know that other veterans, other women veterans, don't have the same experience. I know their experiences is a little different. I believe that there are things in place to, you know, for some women veterans, but then I also believe that there's still a lack and there's still a need for safe spaces for women veterans.
Sirene Renee, United States Air Force veteran.
I would say my very first issue, or the when I realized that my gender was an issue, I was still in Security Forces Academy in Lackland, and we were at lunch. A guy in another squadron, another unit, another training said, I can't believe they letting girls do this. And I looked at him and I said, listen, the Bronx could either come out of me real quick, or this could be a teaching moment for everybody involved. Now, at that point, the guys on my team, they pretty much treated us, we're all in this hell together. And they were like, yo, you want me to handle this for you? I was like, no. I said, you know what? One day you might be in a position where the only one that can help you is a woman. And she's going to do it. She's going to do it because that's what she's trained to do and morally right to do. Not because you see her as inferior because she's a woman. I suggest you get out of my face now. Women weren't allowed to be in security forces until 1981. They had tried before in the 70s, tried and failed, and closed it back down to a male-dominant career field. When I got in, those guys that did not want those women back in 1981, 82, 83 are now my superiors. So it was a challenge to prove myself as if I was worthy enough to wear the uniform and do what you do. A lot of them did not want to see women in that capacity, and they did not treat us kindly or fairly. So it was something that I battled, especially going on deployments as the only female, because sometimes you would look to your left and your right and you wouldn't see another woman until the next shift. 52 guys and me. Majority of those guys would treat me as a sister. Yeah, but then you have leadership that was just treat me as a woman that they didn't want there. And that was a conversation I had with a superior in the middle of the desert when we were getting ready to go and forward deploy to Baghdad. It was my second deployment, and they gave me a buddy. I was like so excited that I had another woman on this team to go through because I went through hell on my first one. We were in Saudi Arabia gearing up to move out to Baghdad. It was 2003. We were leaving Saudi Arabia and forward deploying, and he just said, "I can't believe this is happening." Now, we're not sure what he means. We're all in this tent, a little solemn and not quite sure what we're getting ourselves into. So somebody asked him, like, "Hey, man, what are you talking about?" He's a master sergeant, by the way. I'm not going to name his name. And he said, because they're on a team and they shouldn't even be in my Air Force. So why did you put us on a team? Because we're clearly qualified to be here. We're 4 months in. We live in this hellhole with you. We endure this with you. We're in this bare base with you, with little to no resources. And we still didn't live up to his standards just because we were women. And we had to look at each other like, I can't respect him past his rank. And if I don't respect you as a person, I ain't gonna respect you. I didn't speak to that dude for a very long time during the deployment. They would say, "That's your team lead." I'm like, "No, it's not." I'd go to my immediate supervisor and I'd never take an issue up with him. I didn't speak to him for 4 months in Baghdad. So if you can't trust your leadership in that type of hardship in wartime environment, that's very hard on you as a person, because your leadership and your team is all you have. You got on the plane with them and you're hoping to get back on that plane and go home to your family with them. So I would say that was the hardest thing and the best thing, because I grew really strong. I grew really strong from that situation, those situations. Throughout those 15 years, I was constantly proving myself, especially when I was NCO and I was a reservist at Andrews Air Force Base. I, in certain capacities, would have to prove, listen, I'm an NCO just like everybody else, but I'm also the only NCO in this entire squadron. Did I love my service? Yes. Would I do it all over again? Yes. Were there some really bad days? Absolutely. When people say, "Oh, what was your worst day in the military?" You're expected to say September 11th if that was the day that you were in. No, my worst day in the military was the day that I became part of the Me Too movement from someone that was supposed to be a brother, quote unquote. I looked at it at a different, the rose colored glasses, if I had them on at that point, was definitely shattered. I had an issue when I was deployed, and it was a big problem, but it stayed in between the 13 of us. We were at a bar, and I was about 20. Yeah, 20. And he got drunk. He was an NCO. I was an airman, two stripes. Tried to pin me against the wall and kiss me and hold me down. And it was at that moment where he got elbowed in his ear. He got, you know, I went and started fighting. And it was a couple other airmen that was on a team that had to jump him off, get him off of me. And we all started fighting. When I got back to the States, I just came back angry. It was F this, F you, good morning, get out of my face. I came back so angry and so, like, I didn't leave that way, but I came back for like 2 months and I had no regard for anybody because I felt like no one had any regard for me. I never spoke of it. It would have had to come from somebody else in my team. They told either the commander or the sergeant, I don't know, for sure, to somebody. Because the commander came out on a post check and said, you want to tell me anything? And I was like, no. He said, well, I heard there was some things that happened during the deployment that was unbecoming to certain NCOs. I said, listen, you put me on that team as the only woman. Now you want to have a conversation of my treatment. Next time you want to send a woman on a deployment by herself with 13 other men, don't. And that's all I have to say to you.
Of course, comments were made. Comments were made about my body. Comments were made about, you know, let's do this. Comments were made highly inappropriate. For instance, walking to the office. Oh, there she is. You know, if I told you you had a beautiful body, would you hold it against me? Yeah, so I just came to see if you can sign this paper for me. No room. No room for joking. Like, oh, ha-ha, that's funny. It's not funny to me. I'm here to do a job, and it's unfortunate that I can't rub shoulders with you. You know, we can't have that type of relationship that we should have. So it was always serious. It was always, and I was told oftentimes, stop taking life so seriously. You need to loosen up a bit. I can't loosen up. I can't afford to loosen up. It's too much of that.
When I first got to my first duty station, it was a lot of sexual harassment from the higher ups. Oh, you want to be posted in a better post? Well, you got to come out with me to Red Lobster. What? And it would happen all the time. I have seen women attempt to report something. And instead of the superior getting in trouble, the woman is shipped off to a whole nother base out of sight, out of mind. So I would see girls get shipped off. Like, okay, where did she go? Girl, she's in Korea now. How? She made a complaint and a week later she got ordered to Korea? Where did you do that? How does that happen? But she's still violated. This dude is still walking around. And the issue is never resolved. So do you say something and you get that backlash?
What is required just for women veterans or women soldiers to be heard, as if the story that they're telling is not valid, as if the story that they're telling is not real? Because at the time that they were experiencing these unfortunate things happening to them, oftentimes it's not a fellow soldier. A lot of times is coming from a higher up. So to have to force that, the woman soldier, to go through the chain of command. So I'm gonna come to your office and talk to you, and you're my offender? And then they wanna see some things reflected in your records. And so in order for me to believe your story, I'm gonna look at your record and see what you did after this. So did you become a drug user? Did you start, you know, drinking alcohol very heavily? Did you request to be transferred? Did your behavior change? Did you start receiving counseling statements? Or did you get, you know, written up for other things? We need to see those changes. That's the only way we're going to believe you. Can you imagine that? I don't think that there's anything more humiliating than to have to pretend that what happened did not happen.
And when you deploy, the rapes and the violations that happened, I remember in my last deployment, I was in back in Iraq, and it came down mandated that no Air Force woman would walk by herself at any time after dark, because the rape and assault from the other services on the base was so high that everyone was in danger. So my best friend had I want to get something to eat. You got to come with me to the chow hall. And he had to walk me because I wasn't even allowed to walk by myself. Because we're in a wartime mission. There's no lights out. We have tents and cubicles and all kind, you know, vestibules and stuff. You go in the center of that, there's no light. You have a little red flashlight with a red lens. That's it. No one can see you. We're in the middle of the desert. No one's going to hear you. So when they came out with that mandate, I said, oh, it's really bad.
There's still a stigma. There's still this thing. I said it earlier about women veterans not being taken seriously. And so we fall through the cracks a lot. And that's something that needs to change. It really does need to change.
And they want to have this big front. Like, it doesn't happen, and it happens too often, unfortunately. And to try to cover up, oh, there's no assault and there's no rape and no this in the military. Where did you get those people from? The same corner you get everybody else from. So when people think of the military, they think of this elite force of strategic might, foolishness. They forget that these are people who volunteered for a service, who were once civilian with the same mentality, the same thoughts, the same morals, or lack thereof. We're not elite. We're not superior. We're people. So we're not this elite, mighty force that they try to make us into, these little soldiers who are essentially maybe brainless and live, eat, breathe BDUs and ABUs and things like that. No, these people are nothing more than civilians who raised the right hand for whatever reason they raised their right hand for. If people are upset that I said that, why are you not upset at the man who violated me? Where's your moral standard on it? You can't be mad at someone for saying their truth and sharing their experience once asked, and then say, oh, she shouldn't have said that. Well, he shouldn't have did that. And then it wouldn't be a topic. And I'd be talking about something totally different. Don't look at me. Look at yourself. If you're mad at me for, or anybody for having an honest moment and sharing their story or sharing their opinion, why does it make you so upset? Find a mirror. Don't look at me.
As a woman veteran, do you ever feel conflicted between defending the military and acknowledging the high rates of sexual assault?
Nope. We need to know those stories. So I'm not going to sit there and make excuses for a cover-up or a downplay and act like it doesn't exist. People ask me all the time, was there anything that... Yes, all the time. And I answer the question, and I answer it so candidly and sometimes passionately. It shocks them because I'm expected to lie. I ain't got no time for lies.
CivRep NYC is produced and edited by me, Gil Feliciano. Interviews are conducted by me and U.S. Navy veteran Monique Johnson. For the New York City Department of Veterans Services, stay safe.